The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
They say I'm disturbed.
From city to city, an incredible hysterical panic spread.
I think we're getting into a weird area here.
Will you tell these fools I'm not crazy?
This hysteria.
You can't handle the truth.
His brain is gone.
This is Hysteria 51. The truth is out there.
It's alive.
But you won't find it here.
They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
Cut the music. We're back. We're back.
A dinosaur tail.
Oh, good. Just what nobody was hoping for.
I was.
Shut up, Kyle.
Jesus, at least some things never change. Just like the fact that we're broadcasting from the lower fourth dimension, also known as Chicago, with a tether to parts unknown, Colorado.
See, I knew you could take over for me in the transition department whenever needed.
It's a gift.
Goforth used to always give me crap because of my transitions, but I think they're just delicious. Speaking of gifts, though, we have the gift of life. At least we've given it to a couple robots here, Conspiracy Bot. Kyle, say hello, boys.
Hi, Matt. Everyone.
Again, my lawyer has informed you to stop saying we. That is all you.
Sorry, old habit. But I am Brent Hand, and he is David Flora. And we got some folklore in store for you this week. David, you are our resident folklorificionado, folklorist? What is the, what's the term?
I'll accept that, sure. I'm happy with that.
Folk Führer.
Okay, yeah, I retract my statement.
What is it about folklore that's so captivating? You've grown to love it a ton. You've done a ton of folklore stuff on your show.
Yeah.
What is it that made you go, Blurry Photos is going to be the folklore show? That's not really what you did, but I just like to paint you into a corner. No, but what is it about folklore?
I do like me some folklore. To me, it is all the ghost stories and urban legends and cryptids and encounters all rolled into how do we tell each other about this? And it's got a little mythology in it. It's always, you know, there's some kind of kernel of truth there. There's how you can see how things evolve over time with storytelling and how it is placed in the time that we live in. You know, a story from the 18th century is going to be much different than a story from today.
Yeah.
Much different from a story in the 20th or 19th centuries. You know, it's just, to me, it's fascinating to see all those little nuances in the stuff. And the stories themselves are fun because they're often either creepy or just out of the ordinary enough to where, you know, it almost makes life worth living.
What makes something folklore versus urban legend or a lie or a tale or whatever? And I don't even know if you know. I'm putting you on the spot there. But, like, is there a certain thing?
I think it's probably squares and rectangles at that point.
right. Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like a what is it? A square is a rectangle, but a rectangle is not a square kind of thing. But, you know, they're all the same kind of shape generally. One's just a long
so it's board. Whoever was writing the story at the time, whichever they tagged it with.
Well, I think there's a better breakdown of them that I'm not able to articulate, but you know, urban legends are kind of things that you hear about, like the gators in the sewers in New York, and the hook on the door of the car, the high beam flashlight. It's basically
from inside the house.
That too, you know, that's all. But folklore, in a way, is a little more. I want to say it often teaches morals and stuff.
Yeah,
or can,
Right.
But not always.
Folklore is the stuff that they told you when you're in school, when the guy with lots of pans came in and was like,
we're going to tell you some stories this week. Then I got to go prospecting.
But the fun thing about folklore is it could also delve into things like home remedies and how to get rid of ghosts with sage, you know, yeah. Things like just knowledge that's kind of passed around, like country mm-hmm. knowledge. And that to me is also
you got
also
a cut,
folklore.
Put some mercury on it.
yeah. You know? And then go outside at midnight when the moon's full and spit three times and turn in a circle, you know.
And that's... drink some water out of a wolf's footprint, you know.
Yes.
Like weird exactly. stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, there's a good way. And that's, you know what, you've kind of made me want to better myself, Brent. I need to... I need to learn the differentiation between all that stuff.
I make David Flora want to be a better man. You heard it here first, kids.
There you go. Put it on a t-shirt.
Outside of this week's topic, the Red Ghost, do you got a favorite piece of folklore or one that you've maybe done before? Or maybe you haven't even covered before that you're just like, that is perfect or fun.
Yeah,
or
I mean,
awesome.
my absolute favorite is always going to be Spring Hill Jack.
Oh, man. Which we've done on here. You were way back when.
That was what my first episode.
I think
here?
It was. Yeah. Yeah.
We had a great time with that, but, I feel like this is a great example of folklore because there's not a lot you can do to track it down or verify it, you know, or mm-hmm. unverify or anything. It's all storytelling and what was in the newspapers, what people said to each other. And it's kind of grown, and who knows what happened. You know, it seems like something happened. You know,
there's going to be a ending to or a said ending that's interesting, but that's even conjecture because if that really happened, well, maybe, maybe not. It's
yeah.
It's great. Folklore's great because, you know, you tell someone and they tell two friends and they tell, you know, that's the way it friends. Spreads yeah. and goes viral. So
how about you? What's yours?
Man, that is a great question. I don't know. Growing up, like, we always had, like, my grandpa would always tell me stories of ghosts from England because that's where he was from, and I was terrified of ghosts, and there was this one called the Dobby Old Ghost. I have no idea where that came from, but it was one that it lurked in cellars, and it would pull children down into them.
Oh, boy.
And we had a big old dark basement in my house. What a fun thing to be telling us.
Well,
you know, my grandfather
sounds like grandpa kept a lot of bodies and didn't want kids going down
don't
there.
Don't go lurking in the basement, boy.
Dobby is free.
There's a lot of them that are, you know, and even there's those, you know, as kids, we get told all these other stories that probably folded that, you know, like John Henry and Babe and the Blue Ox, you know.
Yeah,
and
tall tales are definitely folklore.
Yeah, you know, and it's something that you're inundated with, you know, and stuff that's even not, you know, a Johnny Appleseed, which is there's these nuggets of truth in these things, and they take on a life of their own. So that's pretty cool. But this week we are speaking on a specific one. And hopefully you ain't afraid of no ghosts, at least not red ones, because that's the topic this week. The Red Ghost of Arizona. It's not iced tea this week, but it is a creature of folklore. 99 cents for a big can. You know, inflation can suck its butt.
Excellent. Yeah. It's high fructose corn syrup, but you can't beat that price.
Hey, it's better than low fructose. We're ready. We're ready.
Speaking of, have you guys ever wanted to quench your thirst on a hot... I'm sorry. It just seemed like the start of an ad.
This one dates back to the 19th century, according to legend, and it's a, well, you know, no surprise here, a fearsome, almost like supernatural French. Beast that terrified settlers and Native Americans in the American Southwest.
If you had just said Native Americans and not mentioned settlers, I would have just thought the Red Ghost was the white man.
Sadly, that tracks, David. Oof. Oh, nervous laughter. David, tell us about it and break down, give us the 411, your elevator pitch, whatever you want to call it, on the Red Ghost.
Yeah, this one's a fun one because, as we'll discuss, there's a lot of truth to this.
Mm-hmm.
The Red Ghost is said to have first appeared in the 1880s, with the first reported sighting occurring in 1883. Settlers described it as a massive red beast standing over 30 feet tall, able to move quickly and silently despite its size. It was often reported to vanish as quickly as it appeared, contributing to its ghostly reputation. Plus, for shiggles, it was often said to have a skeletal figure riding on its back. Now, Brent, was that a, you know, 5 foot tall skeleton on a 30 foot tall beast, or was it proportional?
That brings up a good point. Was it to scale? Was it to scale, right? Yeah. Now I'm already in the weeds with this whole Red Ghost thing.
That was the penny on this railroad of information. Mm-hmm. They say it gave the creature a particularly supernatural and menacing aura, as skeletons often do, and it quickly became a feared figure in local folklore.
Yeah, you know, because it was all sunshine and rainbows until the skeleton got involved. 30-foot massive hulking beasts able to move quickly and silently, that's everyday crap in the 1800s in America, but you throw a skeleton on his back and shit gets a little sideways.
That's verbatim what Darwin's paper said, right? It was all just sunshine and rainbows until skeletons got involved.
Oh, that's the truth. No matter if there is a skeleton or not, though, that's a hell of a creature in a story. And we got a lot of people that say they saw it. We're going to head to break. But when we come back, we break down accounts of the Red Ghost and take a stab at explaining it all, or at least telling you how others explained it. I'm not out there traipsing through the underbrush, but that's all coming up next on Hysteria 51. Hola, David. Me amo Brent.
Bonjour, Brent. Je m'appelle David.
You didn't do Spanish. I thought if we were going to do this together, we'd do the same language.
Oh, sorry.
That's on brand for us.
I just thought romance languages was the key.
Everything I say is romantic, and that is thanks to Rosetta Stone. You guys, we've been touting these things forever. We love Rosetta Stone, and we actually are users. David, you've really been using it even for longer than I. What's your experience been like?
Oh, it's been great. The thing is, you really get to learn how to speak and think in that language with it. So it's very high on pronunciation too. So you can, you know, learn how to speak.
And you know, our show is all about proper pronunciation.
In that pronunciation. Yeah, that's right. But they designed it for long-term retention, you know, if you don't get the pronunciation right, you say it until you do. And then, you know, that just seeps into your head.
Well, and that's why, you know, this has been trusted by experts for 30 years, and there's over 25 different languages that you can learn, and people, millions and millions of users use it because, like you said, it does seep in, and you're using it with, you know, you get speech recognition and it hears you. You get to use like the built-in true accent features that gives you this pronunciation, which is super convenient, and you can do it at your own time. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm all about value, and you get a one-time purchase, 25 languages. If I learned all 25 languages, I'd be so confused. Or really cool. I have to go in and out.
But you'd be real marketable.
But literally, though, this is something that we use, and we have, both of us have given the seal of approval because we want to do this long term, and it's something that it works, you know, and we don't do long term stuff like this. And this is the one that we've chosen, and we love it. So all you guys got to do, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now, as we've told you 1,000 times, and it's always now. Right now. Get now. Started. For a very limited time, Hysteria 51 listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
How much?
50%. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your unnatural life.
Wow.
Redeem, redeem, redeem. How do they do it?
Rachete, you're 50% off. Rachete. Redeem it. 50% off. RosettaStone.com/today. Do it today.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All right, sightings time. Like we said, the first known accounts of this said red ghost of Arizona date back to the 1880s.
When men were men and women were considered slightly more than property.
Again, the tough truths coming out of our I almost said robot friend, but that, that doesn't track there.
Where men were men and women were men and children were men that did all the work.
Well, I'm four. Time to go to the mine.
Yeah. Can you pick me up a pack of smokes?
None of that pussy filtered shit.
No, I went straight to Becky.
Okay. Well, the creature, which, as we said, described as 30-plus foot tall gigantic beast, began to feature in stories among settlers and then in newspaper reports in Arizona and other parts of the American Southwest. That's how you go viral at the time. Literally, you tell a bunch of people, and the newspaper goes, well, it must be true because Clancy from the old Davidson claim saw this thing, and everyone knows he don't get into the shine, so it must be true. One of the earliest recorded encounters with the Red Ghost took place in 1883. I think you said that before. There was a woman living on a lonely ranch in Eagle Creek, Arizona, and she was found trampled to death. Tons of reports, David, called it a lonely ranch. Like, someone wrote that and everyone ran with it, so I had to include that. What a weird inclusion. She wasn't there by herself, as we're about to learn, but it was lonely. It's a lonely ranch.
I don't know. I feel like that was a little bit lazy because didn't that describe 9 out of 10 places back then?
Right? No, like the women were home alone half the time. Well, I say home alone. They were there with their 13 to 74 children at the time. But otherwise, you know.
I'm looking up Eagle Creek just in case anybody's wondering. It is actually pretty close to the eastern border with New Mexico, and it does look like a pretty lonely area.
That was the New Mexico Territory, probably at the time or whatever.
Oh, yeah, probably. Could have been the Arizona Territory. Well, I don't know. But the Gila Box Riparian National Conservation Area couldn't fit it all until I hovered over it.
Gila Box.
Owl Creek Campground, Eagle Creek. It was just birds out there, apparently.
Yeah, just pecking away, pecking. Gila Box sounds like a Slayer album or something. I don't even know what that sounds like. Gila Box. Anyway, two men left their lonely ranch house to check on their cattle in this story. While they were out, one of the rancher's wives heard their dogs loudly barking as opposed to quietly barking, followed by a loud scream. She rushed the window and saw what she described as a huge reddish-colored beast ridden by a devilish-looking creature and proceeded to lock her front door and wait for the men to come back. And when the two men returned, they found the other lonely wife had been trampled to death. Huh. Anyway, nearby, there were huge cloven footprints and strands of red hair were found caught on the local vegetation. And then the woman's lonely husband and children said that she was killed by a huge, devilish, lonely creature that looked like a lonely camel with something that looked like a lonely man or a skeleton strapped, you pick your poison, to its lonely back. Lonely.
Right. I also just found nearby this Eagle Creek is Three-Way, Arizona.
Oh, I would have figured that would have been in Utah, but that's interesting.
Three-Way Store and Station.
Oh.
Right there in a what is very decidedly, Brent, a four-way intersection. So I'm a little bit disappointed.
That's called Cuck Corner.
Oh, God. My bad. It does have a merge lane.
Uh-oh. Later that same year, the year of our Lord, 1883, a group of prospectors.
That's my claim.
We gotta go reconnoiter that rim.
Get your pans, boys. She's a spoutin'.
So these prospectors near Clifton, Arizona. Here, I don't know.
Arizona. Near Tucson, Arizona.
The reported seeing is similarly monstrous creature. No reports of loneliness this time around. I just want to throw
Clifton
that out
there. Is right nearby.
Mm-hmm. Well,
it is not far.
There you go. And if no one is ever lonely in Clifton, there's a there is a this sounds like a song from a musical or
Conway
something.
Twitty.
Yeah, right. Oh. No one's lonely in Clifton. They fired their guns at it, as you do when you see devilish hell beasts, and it ran away, but not before one of them got a good look at it. He described a beast that was taller than a man, covered in long red hair, with a skeletal figure strapped to its back.
You know what's taller than a man?
What's that?
Something that's 30 plus feet.
You goddamn right. So far, they are banging on all cylinders with this bitch, and I'm hanging on by just the skin of my teeth, waiting for the truth.
By a snatch of red hair. Mm. You're hanging on by a...
Red snatches. Hang on to them. Anyway, in another report, a farmer in Phoenix woke up to find one of his field trampled by, you guessed it, what seemed like a large animal. How large? We're not so sure, but it could have been 30-plus feet. The creature had also eaten some of his vegetables and left behind a print that was unlike anything he'd seen since
since his prospecting day.
I was going to make a camel toe joke, but I'm just going to pull out on that one. It was larger than that of a horse and clearly cloven. And he also found long red hairs clinging to its fence. Why can't, speaking of they're finding all these hairs, why can't Bigfoot shed like this bastard? You know, everyone goes out, they can never find hair. Well, this thing, everywhere it's going, it's got like... Was that alopecia? Is that when your hair falls out?
Yes, I know it well.
Oh, why am I laughing? I'm so sorry.
Shit, now I forgot what I was going to say.
Bigfoot shedding, cloven hooves, camel toes.
It was all that just assaulted my brain and turned it off. I'll take this opportunity. Phoenix is about 160 miles away from this, from this area we're talking about right now.
As the crow flies.
as the red ghost runs. But I mean, if you're 30 feet tall, presumably you're taking longer strides, which means, you know, that might only take you a day or so to get there.
Truth, you know, you really, if you're not a shuffler, you're probably doing okay. Well, speaking of that, creature was again spotted just a few days later, this time being described as, you guess it, 30 feet tall, knocking over two wagons with red hair again being found attached to things. And as, you know, as is to do in that time, the legend was spread around and it spread quickly with various tales being told. One describing the creature killing and eating a grizzly bear. Well, another said it disappeared into thin air when chased, but all the tales agreed that there was a definite skeleton of a man on its back. That's interesting.
How do they know this information?
What's that?
How do they know this information?
It was put into several of the newspapers at the time, which we all know 1800s newspapers were just bastions of truth.
Well.
Then a cowboy tried to lasso the beast, but was knocked to the ground and nearly killed by it. Not before seeing the figure on his back. Guess what it was?
Skeletal.
Yep. You get that.
I love that part. I like that. Like, now we got a cowboy trying to like Red Dead Redemption 2 is now in play.
A few months later, a group of five men shot at the beast, missing it, but shooting the head off the skeleton. Finding hair and skin still attached, saying it was a real human skull. Then that spreads, and the sparks fear and speculation among settlers who began referring to the creature as the Red Ghost.
Hey, that's nice. The episode's cheese muffin.
Nothing gets past Kyle. I don't know if you've noticed that or not.
He's a sharp cookie.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, sharp cookies, they're tasty.
The tale spread and grew, eventually becoming part of Arizona folklore, but the true, and I'm saying that with air quotes, identity of the creature was not definitively confirmed until years later, allegedly. We're going to go to break, and when we come back, we're going to spill the beans, tell the truth. Prospectors eat beans, right? That's just,
sure.
They eat a lot of beans. You know, that seemed like the right thing to say there. We're going to tell you the truth after this break on Hysteria 51. So what the hell is this thing?
It's a massive red beast standing over 30 feet tall, able to move quickly and silently despite its size, and has skeletons and shit on it. You already covered this.
All right, well.
How am I the only one paying attention?
Sure. I guess it's, let's pretend that it isn't all true and discuss what BS people still spill to cover up the truth.
Hear, hear.
Before we kick out the truth here, does this knock off all the, or click all the boxes for you of a good folklore tale, or how do you feel about this one?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, this is, it's spread around, right, from different sources. It's all anecdotal. We didn't come across anything that said that they collected the hair at all, right? They just said,
They looked at it. They probably went like, yep, that's definitely evil.
That's hair.
30 feet
and,
plus.
You know, I'm not trying to blame people for not taking samples, putting it in plastic bags, mm-hmm. sending it off to San Diego State or whatever. You know, like, that's just, we're not in that time yet.
Well, if you go, we should collect that sample and send it off to the university, they'd shoot you for being a learned man.
They'd bury you in sand out there. So, yes.
That's but the devil's doing that learning. Well, next thing you know, you're going to learn to read. Then you're going to teach your women how to read. And, oh, Jesus, keys to come and take us away.
I hear that's making a comeback.
Jesus.
That's the plan.
You know, your whole train of thought with how they dealt with this, with intelligence.
That's a topical and accurate truth. Oh.
And newspapers, you're right, they were a huge deal with this kind of stuff.
Man, they would print this stuff so many times. We've covered
things.
Yeah,
they'd pick it up. It'd probably go across America, sometimes across the world, with articles that, you know, people thought might be interesting and this and that. You always wanted to check the dates.
There's no vetting. There was no vetting. They would
articles.
Not that, but you need to per se be like all the time, oh, this is, you know what I'm trying to say? Like, even at the time, it was loose storytelling or whatever, you know, and they'd say journalism, it as truth. Yeah. They would say it as truth, like, oh, Judge So-and-so's barn was knocked over by a 7,400-pound grizzly standing 26 feet tall, speaking perfect Swahili, and, you know, and then that spreads, and then you wonder why now people go like, oh yeah, that one, well, not now, but, you know, years later, people would talk about that as the truth. I read it in the newspaper.
Yeah. Well,
now we know better. We only got to read Facebook to know it's true.
Yeah, it's the only source of information. So they also had their clickbait, mm-hmm. you know, because they needed those pennies.
You're right.
And it was a good racket.
All they had to do is buy it. Then get someone to read it to them, and they were hooked.
I prefer the days of the Roman Forum, when you'd have the big dude standing out there reading off
the
tablet.
Town crier. Hear ye, hear ye.
Did you ever watch Rome?
No.
Oh, man. Well, Rome's worth a watch just in general, but they have one dude that stands out there and reads the news, and also there's like advertisements that he has to read with them too, and it's great.
And if you need to get your toga white, 24 Mule Team Borax.
Yeah, I think he talks about like grain or flour, like a certain flour or baker or something that. Like at some points, it's
love that I was. It was in Pompeii or somewhere, and they were unearthing and they found graffiti, like but carved in, and it's shit like today, like so and so is a whore and gave me herpes, shit like that, you know, like. So and
for a good time, calls Centurion.
So and so, literally, so and so sucks the best cock at the brothel.
Oh yeah,
I was like, oh my god! And then there were dicks carved into things. But our inability or ability to drop the penis has not really changed. It looks like if I had went to draw it,
I would argue it's gotten worse since then.
I was just like, it makes me so happy that some dude's like, hee, 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 tink, 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 just laughing drunk on meat or whatever, or just eggs, because, you know, everything was probably fermented and gross then.
Lead.
Yeah.
Just hopped up on lead.
I got the itis and I need to chisel me out a dick. all right. Let's get it going here. It was really... They say, as you probably have already picked up, wait for it, a camel, a feral camel, or had become a feral. David, break it down for those playing along at home, if you will.
This is great. This is where our kernel of truth gets in here.
This is great, because then it really does give it this, like, oh, okay, kind of fun. It makes it more fun to me.
Well, and once we get through... You know, this is another kind of thing that I think is not too far off from being true in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. So anyways, in the mid-19th century, the United States Army, the fledgling army at the time, imported camels to the Southwest as part of the Camel Corps experiment, intending to use them as pack animals in the harsh desert environment.
That actually makes a lot of sense when you think about it.
It does. Yeah. It absolutely does. Now, they abandoned this experiment for a number of reasons, not the least of which was the camels scared the shit out of the horses.
Yeah.
Horses hate camels.
Isn't that weird? They flail when they walk, and horses are – no. Seriously, though, have you ever seen a camel run and walk?
Oh, yeah.
And they get spooked. They get spooked by them. It's fucking weird. You're right.
You know, camels would be good for this, and I think they did get some use out of them, but they just didn't get along with horses, and you know, horses were king back then. Mm-hmm. And I think there was, you know, a few other things that kept them from keeping this experiment going, but they abandoned it.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happened, what do you do? I mean... you know, I'm sure there were some monsters that just shot the camels.
Yeah.
But most of them were just let go into the desert.
Yep.
And
it's kind of like Florida when all those snakes in, what was it, like 1994 got the storm, took out that snake place. Yeah. And now we're, you know, 30 years later and giant anacondas and pythons and boas and stuff just so happened to got released into a swamp. Hot climate, which is perfect for them, you know, and by God, they're still alive and kicking because who knew? Mm-hmm. And they're not supposed to be in that area, but hey, now they are.
It's just like that time that circus train overturned down in Honey Island, Louisiana, and that orangutan escaped and mated with a gator, and now you got your Honey Island swamp monster. Where you need
when we're done going Vienna through this, remind me on circus signal. Train disaster. I got a story on that. We'll kick that to the end, though.
this really kind of points to... an origin story for where all these stories and settlers getting freaked out came from. And it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Or, David, they were used as scapegoats by the government to cover up the truth. If you choose your own adventure on that one, because we all know there's probably a 30-foot tall hell beast roaming around just shedding fur like a motherfucker out there. And just like a young fledgling U.S. government to cover up the truth.
I would love it that... the government's like, okay, this ghosts are real, and we're going to cover that up. It was the 19th century.
Bring me some camels. Now that we've established that nonsense for an answer, there's one final piece of the puzzle missing. That skeletal rider. And that part is a little more gruesome, or it has a more gruesome explanation.
Yahtzee.
One of the camels truthfully reportedly found with a human skeleton strapped to its back. And that would have been the unfortunate victim of a cruel prank, maybe punishment, or maybe just died because of reasons.
Couldn't get out of the, he couldn't get his boot out of the stirrup.
Yeah, not quick enough. Uh-oh. We've seen in movies humans strapped to horse or camels and then sent off on the rider to die. They did that in, it was in one of the Mad Maxes. He ended up getting off there, but, you know, they put a little water dangle out in front of the horse. You know, well, you do it in the camel, and there you have it. There's been various tales. They've appeared to explain it over the years. Some saying it was a prospector dying of thirst, tied himself to the back, hoping it would bring him to some water so he didn't fall off, and he died. Others say it was a soldier learning to ride a camel, and it bolted off, and he died. Somehow, I don't know how, but maybe he was shot. And he was, you know, like you said, stuck in the reins. Anyway, the verifiability of some parts of the legend remains dubious, questionable, you know. They say, as I don't know if you know this, some records are missing or have been lost over time from the way out west in the 1880s. But I call BS on that because we all know the U.S. government is infallible.
Yeah, super sus.
Plus, on a gross and sadder note regarding the camel that was found, the fucking straps, they say, had grown in the animal's flesh, meaning that the body had been there for quite some time. Fucking terrible. I feel more sorry for the camel, almost, having that thing on its back.
It's going around tearing shit up.
Yeah, you know, it's scared of people. It all came to head when that cowboy we were talking about in Arizona shot and killed a wild camel. And it actually did have a skeleton body strapped to its back. The rider was dead. And that's where the straps growing into it came from. And that is believed to be true because there's multiple reports. But like I said, they're all a little dubious. Mizzou Hastings was his name. Perfect cowboy name. He found the creature eaten in his yard and proceeded to shoot it, killing it in a single shot, he said. And the skeletons were a man. The camel is a local legend because of that. In fact, there's a sculpture of the camel at Quartzsite Arena, Arizona. I'm having a hard time saying Arizona.
That's because you're not a regular human bartender.
Not too far from the grave of High Jolly, an Ottoman camel driver who worked for the Camel Corps.
High Jolly sounds like a 1920s porn name.
If not, it should have been. It could be in right now's porn name, and I'm not going to be upset about it. To me, the story, David, of the Red Ghost I think you summed it up, but it's a fascinating blend of history and folklore. And that kind of demonstrates how unfamiliar and out of place elements, like a camel, something as mundane as that truthfully now, can quickly become the stuff of legend when you put it in a new environment and then have something like a skeleton on his back. Really, you put a skeleton on anything's back and it makes it more fun for me. Goes West would have been a better movie if he had a skeleton on his back.
If he was a skeleton.
But the stuff of legend is rarely truth, it seems, but there's also a portion of truth. I don't know. What do you think? Do you think that that's what it was? And doesn't that just feel real to you, or are you not falling for that?
I sometimes wonder with this story if the if it started with the guy who shot the camel and found the skeleton, and then
others like I saw it
was retconned,
right?
But you know this because the American government literally had a camel corps. This is great folklore because it is it might be true. Like great folklore is like you know maybe not in the way you're saying it, but a lot of it is true. So what I was reading up on, this was Jefferson Davis was Secretary of State at the time.
Mm-hmm.
This is in 1855. And he got Congress to appropriate $30,000 for the purpose.
$30,000 grand. I like it.
30 grand.
$300 million.
$300 billions of millions. Thank you for calling that out. 30 grand for the purchase and importation of camels and dromedaries to be employed for military purposes. And he wanted it to help build the railroad and stuff and haul supplies. And, you know, like we said, it was a, it seemed like a no brainer because they were acclimated to that. Horses weren't as good in that environment. Yeah. So they got 75 camels, and within a decade, each and every one would be sold at an auction. And apparently, it just didn't, it wasn't working out. And when the Civil War began, the Confederate forces seized the camp that the camels were stationed at, and then they were turned loose.
Mm.
And this was in Texas, Camp Verde.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they, I think the camels just kind of,
it would make sense anywhere. They would have roamed everywhere, you know?
Yeah, I think some of them went into Mexico, some of them, you know, and of course some of the Confederates, I think, killed some of the camels just for sport.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was pretty interesting. It goes on from there, but it's amazing that this story came out of that. I'm sure there was a bunch of other stories, but
this is the one that's stuck.
If you put a skeleton on the back of something, that's going to get more attention.
Yeah, that's the way that works. Hey, I was looking into like riding camels and stuff like that, just looking into it. And Lawrence of Arabia, the movie, came out in 1962. Peter O'Toole was on a camel in a lot of it, and he said it was like super uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So he cut a piece of foam rubber and put it under the seat to like fill in the space. And the film's extras saw this, who were also, they were the actual camel riders.
Yeah.
And now that's rubbers, called, they call Peter O'Toole the father of the sponge, and it's normal practice now. They put a sponge underneath the camel's, where you sit, you know, between the saddle and the camel, to fill that in. So for hundreds of years they've been ridden, and one dude was like, this is uncomfortable, and they're like,
one actor,
wow, we should have thought of that.
I thought you were gonna say they looked at him, they're like, don't do that, it makes them hot and gets them all mad.
Hot and bothered.
They were like, wow, what a great idea. I mean, you know, Berbers didn't have sponge polyfoam in the desert.
True. But you think maybe they would have put like, you know maybe
blankets, like, or
exactly.
Yeah.
So I was at, this has been a couple of years ago, my wife and I went to Mariano's. It's a local grocery store, and they have an exotic meats counter. And they had camel, just ground up camel, and we bought it, which was very expensive compared to buying beef. And it tastes exactly like beef. So if you ever get a chance, I wouldn't spend the money on it. It literally tastes, you would not know the difference.
I mean, me being, you know, paranoid and misanthropic, I'd be like, they just sold you beef and called it camel.
No, we got to pick the camel and shoot it ourselves. It was really cool. Okay.
Great.
They have interest. So they, you know, more normal. So if they have rabbit and snapping turtle, they have camel and
gator,
elk. They always have gator, and they had rattlesnake and a few other things. But yeah, you know, so we've tried most of them just here and there. Lisa won't do the rattlesnake, because she's scared of snakes. And I'm like, what better way to overcome a fear than by eating? If the boogeyman's coming after you and you ate it, that's a hell of a way.
you looked at him and ate like a boogeyman burger right in front of him. Come on.
When the boogeyman comes
now
at me,
you're the boogeyman.
When the boogeyman comes at me, I just start taking my clothes off. It always stops.
I don't want to find out what happens next.
Just look like you're happy and been waiting for that situation. It always
finally. Oh God.
Satan, I'm pulling out on this one. Didn't I say there was a story?
The boxcar story or the circus train?
Oh, yeah. I've said this on here, I think, before. So I live in Berwyn, Illinois, which is right next to Chicago. And coming out of Chicago or going into Chicago in the 1800s, there was a, or maybe it was like right at the turn of the century, there was a circus train derailment. And hundreds of clowns and carnival folk and all everything died, including elephants and all those animals. And right next to us is Showman's Rest. It is a large cemetery. And well, it's a large cemetery, and Showman's Rest is part of that cemetery. And they have these giant elephant statues where they buried the elephants. And then they have all these graves for the performers. And 90% of them just say like clown one, clown two, clown five, elephant handler nine, kind of crazy, but it is known, and you guys should look this up because it's crazy. Every year until they quit right before the pandemic, they do a clown festival in the fucking cemetery. And you go there, wow, and there's literally 100 clowns performing and families there with tents set up and stuff in a cemetery. I thought it was a joke at first. When I drove by the first time, I'm like, well, there's a nightmare. Hey, kids. Who wants to learn about death? Here's a balloon animal. It's a snake. I'm not very good. So yeah, Google it. Showman's Rest. It's in, I think it's North Riverside, Illinois. It's right next to us. And stuff of nightmares. And people are like, that will not scar my children. Right. Let's go. So it's not a 30-foot beast with a skeleton on his back, but I say it's just as terrifying. And that's not folklore. That's truth, you bastages. But speaking of truth, hopefully you got to, you can tell us the truth. Maybe you guys have a different version of that story you've heard, or you just want to tell us some other folklore that we should be covering here. How can they do that, sir?
You can go to hysteria51.com.
.com.
If you want to send us a weird story, send us weird at hysteria51.com.
Yes, please, please, please.
We like doing those for Blurry Hysterias. You can check us out, Hysteria Nation, on Facebook at Hysteria 51 Pod, facebook.com/Hysteria51 Pod. Patreon, join it. That is just Patreon at Hysteria 51.
Yep.
Or sorry.
Or slash that is Hysteria just, 50. You'll find it. Just Google it. It's on there. go to that Hysteria51.com. There's links to everything. Problems.
That's true.
Solved.
And you can also leave us a voicemail so we can have another fun voicemail episode. 773-669-7277. Find it all at hysteria51.com. Tell somebody. If you like it, you probably have people who like you, so yeah, they would like this
tell
as well.
Tell your therapist. Tell your mom. It's Mother's Day. We're recording this on Mother's Day. So, you know,
that's true.
It's no longer Mother's Day when you're listening, but tell your mom anyway, if she's still around, and I hope she is. Mom, I got to tell you about a skeletal camel jockey.
You skeletal camel. Oh my gosh. That sounds derogatory.
Yeah, somehow it's exactly what we're talking about, and yet I felt bad saying it. Yeah,
right? So yeah, say hi to your mother for us. And, I've got a new show now called 5 Minute Frights. You can find that on most podcatchers. Just started. This is the author Tom Lyons, who I read audiobooks for. He is putting out little 5 minute to, you know, 5-6 minute reports that he has collected, and I narrate them. It's real short. And I think we're going to try and do it weekly.
Nice.
So yeah, 5 Minute Frights.
Put it in your rotation. Hopefully you got 5 minutes to spare. If not, you need to loosen up those belt buckles just a little bit. Because, yeah, that's fun. And you've done a lot of voiceover work for him too on his Sasquatch Bigfoot books too, correct?
Yeah, Living Among Bigfoot, Bigfoot Frightening Encounters, all that good stuff.
You can literally listen to 16 to 17 hours of David Flora every week. It's disgusting.
You could, and yeah, and never tire of of not being dead.
People reach out and they'll be like, I found you guys 6 weeks ago and now I'm caught up. I'm like, good God, man.
Yeah.
It's like 400 and some episodes. And then they join the Patreon. They're listening to that. I'm like, I don't like myself. That my wife definitely doesn't like me that much. but hey, we love it. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah. Thank you for being masochists.
Yes. Weird at hysteria51.com. Get your stuff in. With that said, I've been Brent.
I've been David.
He's been Conspiracy Bot.
Stay lonely, meet sex.
It was terrible. It was just terrible. I'll never get over it as long as I live.
That's it for another edition of Hysteria 51. We'll be back next week with yet more of the unexplained, the unexplored, and the unheard of. Oh, if it's unheard of, how will they know about it? Anyway, if you want to suggest a topic, give us your thoughts, or just make fun of Conspiracy Bot, that's my favourite, join us in our Facebook discussion group, Hysteria Nation. Just log on to Facebook and search Hysteria Nation, or you can always tweet us at Hysteria51Pod.
You've been listening to a fourth-hand joint.